And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. So much to talk about, so much to do, so much going on. The president about to take center stage here in the next half hour or so. I'm going to talk about, inequality. And, you know, as the president takes center stage, you've got the wealth class groups like the Commonwealth Foundation, heavily funded by our billionaire class, who are actually making inequality that much worse. You've got our anti-American paid shills working against workers' democratic rights. And today we're going to talk about what happened in the Capitol this morning. Ran into a bunch of listeners. Thank you for coming up and saying, hey, glad to be, thanks for being here. All of that. Really appreciated some of the really good comments I got from folks. I would love to also hear your thoughts on the rally this morning and where we go from here. It was a fantastic, exceeded all expectations, by far exceeded all expectations. In fact, there were so many people there, they weren't allowing people into the Capitol. Now, that's something they're going to have to look into down the road, but an amazing turnout. And one that I hope will tell our Republican legislators, there are people watching, and lots of people. So we're going to talk about that tonight. Also this morning, before the big rally against the paycheck deception law that the Republicans want to pass, there were the pot people got up. The pot people made it to the Capitol by their 8:45 a.m. time for the rally to support the legalization of marijuana. And I'm told it was an amazing press conference, rally, get-together with lots of great information and all of that. Sadly, I wasn't out of bed yet. And, you know, what I said the other day is, you know, you got the Republicans out there pushing this idea that, well, you know, the pot people, they're going to be stupid. And, you know, then you get that whole they're lazy and all that. And if you can get up at 8:45 and down to the Capitol, you've got respect from me. That's as far as I can go with it. You've got my respect in that regard. I struggled with it. Also going to talk about the Postal Service tonight. And I've been saying this for a while. I actually thought it was going to be Walmart where they're going to stick little post offices in. Turns out Staples is going to be one of the first places. We're going to talk about some of that as there's some pushback across the country. Also going to take your thoughts, your comments, questions, whatever's on your mind, your thoughts on the State of the Union. Unfortunately, I'm not going to get to view it, so we're going to have a couple of guests later on to fill us in on what was said and what the direction. Now, we did get some segments of what the president was going to talk about. He said that he's evidently going to say he wants to make this a year of action. Well, yeah, I would like to see that, too. I'd like to see some action on doing away with, you know, insanity. But, you know, look, the reality is he's supposedly going to come out and say, look, you know, inequality has gotten worse. He's going to say more than three decades, even before the Great Recession, you've had this, you know, this huge shift in technology and global competition and all this stuff that's eliminated good middle class jobs and all that. I'm of the mindset that when you throw that out there like that, trade policy has a lot to do with it. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But down the line, I mean, I'm expecting a reasonable speech. Now, the question is what happens after? I'm hoping the speech will be one of those moments that we're looking down the road and pushing the envelope, pushing the bar, moving the goalposts a little bit and saying, hey, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we started actually talking about making sure that people had opportunity? And I understand that's going to be in the speech as well, where he's going to say, opportunity is who we are. And the defining project of our generation is to restore that promise. Now, look, that promise has been destroyed. And, you know, we talked the other night. I got an email from, I think it was John who sent me an email saying, you know, he remembers his father being able to support a family on one income, a decent income, and still take vacations and do fishing trips and all that stuff. It's getting much, much harder. And hopefully there'll be some talk of that. I'm hoping that you'll say, look, hoping the president will go back to campaign Obama. I liked campaign Obama. I did. I liked him a lot. The fact that he was out there often saying, you know, people should join and form unions and fight for the wages that they deserve and the wages that they earn. So I'm hoping I will watch the speech when I get home, evidently. But not while it's live. And I hope you're here with us as well. Again, thoughts, questions, comments, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Today, sad day. I remember where I was in 1986 on this day, after the U.S. shuttle Challenger exploded, just shortly after it took off, killing seven crew members, including, the school teacher, Krista McAuliffe. And, you know, I remember going just in horror and shock watching that over and over. It was a horrible, horrible day. And, you know, it just makes you want to take a second and remember that. But also remember the challenge that it was to get to that point. The challenge that it was that we came together as a nation and were able to do that. I don't know that we can do great things like that anymore. I worry that's not going to happen. Anyway, today, what I'm going to probably talk about most of the day, and even in spite of the president's speech and all of that, today at the Capitol looked a lot like Wisconsin to me. It looked like Wisconsin all over again in our state capitol as workers and worker right advocates converged on their capitol. And sadly, only to have their collective voices, some left out in the cold. Because there were, I would say, probably 700-800 people that made it inside. And there were equally that many number of people outside that the Capitol Police would not allow in. On one of the most frigid days of the year. And this is, again, you go back to whose house is it? Who does the Capitol belong to? Does it belong to the governor and the Capitol Police? Or does it belong to the people? Now, there was plenty of room for people to go down the hallways. There was plenty of room for people to be in other areas. But they chose to make these folks stand out in the cold. And there was the one moment where there were a couple of the policemen, you know, the Capitol Police, talking to each other. And it was really loud in there. And I was trying to get their conversations, you know, as a member of the press, as someone who wants to know what's going on and asking the question, why aren't you letting these people in? Why aren't you, you know, taking them down the hallways or putting them somewhere inside? Because, you know, they're going to stand and freeze outside. We should help them. Thoughts? Yes, absolutely. And the cops, no, not so much. In fact, the one cop said to the other one, and what I heard him say was, just like Iraq. And then he said something else, and I assume what I thought he said, and I'm not going to swear to it, is that, you know, we're going to have to treat these people like those people. It was kind of that sentiment. But this idea that, oh, it's just like Iraq, where you've got these people who are demanding something. And, you know, I stopped and I thought about that mentality. That in this country, you're going to have someone who looks at people who are saying, look, we demand our constitutional right to air our grievances with our government. And you've got somebody in the Capitol Police Department saying, that's just like Iraq. Doesn't that just grab you and make you stop and think for a moment that, you know, the guy sitting in the governor's mansion and all of the divisiveness. And if you remember, if you've been a long-time listener to this program, and I did run into a bunch of people today who were long-time listeners and remembered us going to Wisconsin, remembered us broadcasting from the Capitol there in Wisconsin and saying, look, hey, we're here several states away because this is going to come our way. And this was back in February 2011. We're saying, look, I don't know when, but I guarantee you it is marching its way this way. There's a playbook. It has been prepared for these right-wing governors. It has been prepared for these Republican legislators. It's right here. It's the American Legislative Exchange Council's playbook. They're just going to hand it around. The Scott Walkers and the Rick Scotts and the Rick Perrys and the Tom Corbetts, these aren't bright people. They're not bright enough to think of all of this stuff on their own. It's all in the playbook. And with the playbook comes a bunch of money. Do what the playbook says, bunch of money comes with it. Seems pretty simple, right? But in the process, who ends up getting screwed in this? Who ends up getting the short end of the stick? The thousands of people who were at the Capitol today saying, hey, we want our voice. We want to be heard. only to be left out in the cold. Now, the Tinky Tank, the Tea Party Think Tank Commonwealth Foundation, they hired somebody from North Carolina, and this, you're going to probably see the story in the morning. They hired some guy from North Carolina, evidently couldn't get someone from Pennsylvania to drive a big truck around with a sign on it that said something about, you know, there's government bosses, there's union bosses. Which, you know, you go, what? We're talking about, what, almost 7% of the private sector workforce is unionized, about 11% overall across the country. And somehow these people have so much power that they're just destroying the nation. The fact that they have any power at all to these folks, the Tea Party think tanks and the billionaires, is too much. The fact that these folks might have some voice, that the collective action of these workers may have some voice left, that's too much for the Tea Party think tank. But anyway, this guy from North Carolina, they had to go all the way to North Carolina to get him. He drove his little truck around the Capitol, you know, it's those union bosses, and I forget what it was. It was really kind of cheesy and poorly done, which is what you would expect from our Tea Party friends. It wasn't misspelled, so you got to give him credit on that. Kudos to the spell checker. But this guy claims that, you know, his car was roughed up and people were calling him names. And, you know, I thought about it, and I seriously doubt anybody touched his vehicle or touched him. Now, I can probably guarantee there are a bunch of names that were thrown his way. But I watched him drive around, and I saw him numerous times, and I saw nobody anywhere near him. In fact, most people chuckled and said, you know, how pathetic. But, you know, what's interesting to me, all the way from North Carolina, couldn't get someone from Pennsylvania, which brings me back to this idea that this isn't something people in this Commonwealth want. All of this is coming from the outside. All of this is coming from Wall Street, the Koch brothers, the billionaire class, and they have to bring in their lackeys and their flacks from out of state. Now, granted, they've got their little army of high-paid minions who will do their bidding, what I would call basically mercenaries. They're message mercenaries. They're soulless. Have no real conviction. It's all about who's going to pay me. And this idea that they care about democracy and they care about taxpayers is absolutely ludicrous. But today's rally was, in my view, beyond expectation. You know, I was expecting, you know, maybe 150, 200 people. I would think there were probably about 2,000 people that showed up. When the numbers, you know, they claimed there were 700-800 inside. I think it was a little more than that. And then when you looked at the sea of people on each side of the Capitol, it was really very impressive. It was an impressive show of worker solidarity and people coming together. That's what we need to see much, much more of. And I really hope, and this is that moment where I've been saying the labor movement in this state and in this country had better wake up and get their heads out of the sand and say, you know what, we need to be getting our members into the streets often. Hopefully this is that moment where they go, hey, you know, the attacks are here. It wasn't just, you know, rhetoric. They're here. The money's here. The Koch brothers are here. The billionaires are here. They're building the even bigger infrastructure. So I'm hoping this is the organizing. And, you know, when you wake up this sleeping giant, when you wake up something that's been fairly dormant, because look, these people, they just want to go to work. They just want to make a good living. They want to support their families. But I talked to so many people today who said, you know what, I didn't see this coming because I've been on the treadmill. I've been, you know, dealing with my family. I've been dealing with my job. I've been working hard, doing all the things that we're supposed to be doing. And now I see that they're coming for me. They're going to stab me in the back. And everyone like I said, fight's on. Game on. So we're going to see where this goes. I've been saying for years, for folks who have been listening, it's going to take people in the streets to change things. And hopefully today that rally was a wake-up call for our Koch brother purchased GOP in the legislature to say, you know what, maybe we need to back away from this. It will be interesting to see. But what has to happen is good, decent, honest people, they've got to start running for office. And when we come back, Come back after the break. We're going to talk with Brian Sanguinito, former president of the Reading Education Association, running for the Pennsylvania House of Representatives in the 99th District. So that ought to be interesting. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The American Postal Workers Union is launching a national campaign protesting the outsourcing of mail services to Staples stores. Joined by community allies, the union is launching the protest campaign in San Francisco and San Jose, California. The union says USPS workers must staff the mail services being offered at Staples stores. USPS and Staples reached an agreement to open trial mail service operations in 80 Staples stores in Northern California, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, and Central Massachusetts. After the trial run, USPS plans to open mail service centers in 1,500 Staples stores nationwide. The union is protesting the outsourcing of mail work to Staples employees. Here's what AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka would like to hear when President Obama delivers the State of the Union speech Tuesday night.
I want to hear about a new push for big changes to make meaningful gains possible in the lives of typical working families. I want to hear about increases in the minimum wage, proposals for sick leave to help families and other measures to boost living standards, to help rebuild a strong middle class, and to stop the collapse of wages for working families.
Trumka and the Labor Federation want Obama to go far beyond that and achieve public infrastructure investment in the trillions of dollars to literally rebuild America while creating good middle class jobs. Trumka says the State of the Union today for working families isn't good.
The official unemployment rate in the U.S. is just under 7%. Down from 10% at its peak, but still higher than at the worst of the 2001 recession. And 5 years after the financial sector meltdown, corporate profits are up, the stock market is way up, and median family income is down 4%.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says it and the Association of Professional Flight Attendants have reached agreement with the new American Airlines on bargaining for joint contract. American merged with U.S. Airways. The two unions represent two groups of pre-merger flight attendant. AFACWA says the two unions will bargain a joint contract with American based on an agreement between the two unions on how the negotiations will proceed. AFACWA says based on the accelerated timeline in the agreement, all flight attendants at American will be reaping the merger's benefits by February 2015 at the latest. The union says that is an unprecedented timetable for airline mergers. The Move Minnesota campaign is pushing for a comprehensive transportation funding package from the state legislature this year. Supported by labor, the movement wants adequate transportation investments to enable Minnesota to properly maintain and improve transportation assets and opportunity for all and create living wage jobs. Minnesota's Laborers District Council supports the campaign. It says nearly half of Minnesota's roads and bridges are listed in poor or mediocre condition, while only 10% of metro area jobs are accessible by public transit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org. Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. So today, I'm sure a lot of the folks who were out at the Capitol, the folks who were left out in the cold, I'm sure they were wishing there was some sunshine out there to keep them warm. And to me, just disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful that our governor and his Capitol Police held these folks out in the cold and wouldn't let them into their Capitol. That's the thing that just blows my mind. And at the end of this, while I'm thrilled that there are people in the Capitol, what I think we need to be doing is kicking the people who are inside, kicking them out. Maybe we should let some of the people who are pushing this poison stand out on the steps and freeze their behinds off, which is why I've asked Brian Sanguinito to come talk with us, former president of the Reading Education Association, and all current, from what I understand, going to be running for, I think, 99th House District seat. Brian, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you very much, Rick.
You know, I look at this, and, you know, I've been saying for some time, folks have got to stand up and fight back, and good on you for throwing your hat in the ring. I give you credit.
Thank you so much. I know that this is a Republican-heavy area, but the truth of the matter is that we need somebody to stand up for our families, stand up for our future, fight for our kids, and the nonsense that's going on in Harrisburg right now is something that we need to say enough is enough.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I was there at that rally today. It was great to see you and see so many people, and I'd agree with you. We had thousands of folks there, and I was one of those people who was originally locked out, sent to the back, then found a way to get inside the rotunda. But I'll tell you what happened is I heard so many people chanting from the outside, let us in, that I decided instead of being inside there, I want to go outside with the people who were locked out, literally left in the cold by our state government, so I could be a part of that.
Well, what I said should have happened is the Democratic leadership, and, you know, and I'm going to bring this up with some of the members that I talk to over the next several weeks. I think they should have been on the auxiliary doors, opening the doors and welcoming people into their offices and saying, you know, we're not going to let our constituents out in the cold. And look, I don't know if they knew or what was going on, but if what I saw in Wisconsin was I saw a Democratic Party that was in, that was helping the people, I want to see that here in Pennsylvania.
I agree completely. That's one of the reasons why I decided to put my name in there and say that I'm going to try to help our people, because I think that, unfortunately, we worry too much about reelection instead of worrying about what the right thing is. And I think the right thing is standing up for kids and standing up for workers. You know, I'm proud to be a teacher. I'm proud to be a part of the middle class. And, you know, as I've talked to you before, that I believe that the unions are the whole reason we have the middle class here. And the whole reason that we're having these attacks against us, especially the false attacks or the false things being said about unions and union dues and deductions and everything else, is because Koch Brothers, ALEC, Commonwealth Foundation, they're all worried that we're going to try to level the playing field. They have the money, but the truth of the matter is, like I said, when I went outside and spoke to some of our people, we have the numbers. And it's time that we use those numbers to our advantage.
Well, as I've always said, Brian, we've out-procreated them. They may have the bank account, but there's more of us. And you're absolutely right. And I think what they're afraid of is we're going to demand some of what we create that they keep taking from our pockets.
Well, the government was quick to bail out Wall Street, but people on Main Street are still struggling to make ends meet. I don't understand why people from out of state are sending so many people into Pennsylvania to destroy the lives and the futures of our state workers, our public employees. If our service workers get laid off, keep having their rights eviscerated, there's not going to be anybody to serve the public anymore.
I'm right there with you. And, you know, as I look at this, you know, the sad reality is there is an assault on public sector workers. There's an assault on workers in general, not just here in Pennsylvania, but all across the country. And I've been saying until we wake up and realize that, you know, an assault on one, on teachers and cops and firefighters now, is eventually an assault on all of us. And look, you know, I see this latest assault, I see this as a continuation of the last one where the Republicans got their pound of flesh in the transportation bill by going after prevailing wage. Once they got that crack of daylight, they thought, hey, game on, we can take on the entire labor movement.
I was very impressed with your point just a little while ago. You know, this union deduction argument, Pennsylvanians, this isn't even on their radar. But the problem is that these are manufactured issues, manufactured crises by the Koch brothers, by ALEC, trying to sway the public against public employees. It's not going to work. But the way it doesn't work is if we get out there and educate the public, if we get enough people running for office and saying, you know what, I'm going to use my voice, I'm going to use my campaign as a platform to educate the public about what's really happening here. This is an attack on blue-collar, hard-working, honest Pennsylvanians trying to make a living, trying to put food on the table for their families. And instead of, and as I've said it before, instead of worrying about making billionaires richer, we need to worry about taking care of the working class.
I'm right there with you. But here's the thing. I mean, when they can throw out these what I call the shiny things, the things that keep us infighting, keep us pitted against one another. And this, understand, this is meant, and thank goodness today we saw a lot of building trades guys, a lot of steel workers, sheet metal workers, Teamsters. We saw all the unions out being represented. This is one of those things that they throw out there to try and divide the unions, try to divide workers. And it's issue after issue. It's about dividing people who are struggling and keep them focused on everything but what's really stealing from their pocketbook and making their lives more difficult. To me, that's the bottom line.
It is the bottom line. And again, you're trying to talk sensibly about people that make no sense. This is the goal of the bourgeoisie to try to oppress the proletariat and to rule by a plutocracy instead of democracy, where only the rich get richer and where only the private school kids get education. You know my past advocacy for public school, and I continue to advocate for that. This is an attack on workers' rights, and just like the presidential election, as Pennsylvania goes, America goes. And this will be the battleground right here, and that's why there's no time better than right now to stand up and say enough is enough. Let's put an end to this nonsense and bring common sense back to Harrisburg for the common good for the common man.
So let's say you're elected in the 99th district as a state house member. What are the things we're going to be going after? I mean, I got to be honest. If I were you, given your background in education, I've said for years, education is the hill that the middle class has to die on. We can't have it stolen away from us. And at some point, we've got to stop this assault on teachers and give them the respect that they're due. Where do you go?
I agree with you completely on that. And one of my campaign platforms is that the hardworking Pennsylvanians in this Commonwealth of ours, this great Commonwealth, deserve as much respect as the people who sign their paychecks. At the end of the day, this is about our future. This is about our kids. This is about providing a proper, fully, fairly funded education. You know, I'm a constitutionalist when it comes to everything, and the Constitution guarantees a thorough and efficient system of public education. I've said this to you before, and I'll say it again. It blows my mind that Tom Corbett, as a former Attorney General of this Commonwealth, has tried to circumvent the wall so many times. We owe it to our kids to make sure that they get resources that they need. You know, government should be making it easier for our students to get into college, not harder. We should be providing more opportunities for our school children, not fewer.
Yep.
And government should be making life better for workers trying to take care of their families and not work. But under Tom Corbett's leadership, we've seen what's happened to the job growth, how much it's plummeted. We've seen the educational opportunities be decimated. We've seen workers' rights disappear. It's time for a change, and that's going to be my entire platform, working for our families, working for our kids, and working for our future.
It's time for a change from the top all the way down to the bottom. I mean, I'm in favor of, you know, at this point, getting rid of it, the whole kit and caboodle, and let's start over, because these last 3.5 years have been horrible. Nothing that I would say is a priority of working people has even been attempted, let alone accomplished by this governor and this Republican-controlled legislature. It's really very much so a time for a change. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Brian Sanguinito, former president of the Reading Education Association. He's also running for the 99th District House seat here in Pennsylvania. Brian, do you have a website up yet?
Well, I'm still putting together my campaign, but I do have a Twitter handle. It's at @fightforPA. Anybody that wants to get involved with the campaign here, this is the Ephrata area, the Eastern Lancaster County School District, and a little bit of Peckway Valley. I'd be more than happy to have anybody that would be interested in helping out get in touch with me there, or they can reach me at fightforpa@yahoo.com.
All righty. We'll make sure that we get – I'll get you on my Twitter account as well. You mentioned you're a constitutionalist, and I just had to – I know the seat that you're running for is – right now, currently filled by Gordo, Gordon Denlinger, who is going to attempt to be a senator. He has this freedom of conscience amendment, which, you know, as I've been saying the last couple of days, is nothing more than me saying, you know, Brian, you know, you got a name that I don't quite know how to pronounce. I don't want you coming into my store and buying groceries, or I don't want you to rent an apartment, or I don't want you to do anything. I'm going to be able to discriminate against you based on just your name, evidently, because I may have some kind of crisis of conscience based on a name. It seems to me to be anything but constitutional.
You know, I talked to you a little bit. I talked actually to some folks that I know about this, and it blows my mind that so many people are unaware of what our own state representative is proposing. And when I talk to folks in stores about what's going on, they're like, how can they possibly consider something like that? It's so absurd. As a matter of fact, it's so absurd, Rick, that when the press decided to interview the Republican Party leadership, they declined to comment on it.
Yeah.
Now, thankfully, our friends and neighbors in Lancaster County overwhelmingly opposed such a ridiculous idea by more than a 2-to-1 margin. But the fact is that Gordon Denlinger is trying to pass legal discrimination. I feel like we're going backwards 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. This Tea Party doesn't want to move this country forward. They want to bring us back to the late 1800s, early 1900s. It's something that is absolutely ludicrous, and you would think that we're making it up, except for the fact that it's true.
No.
You know, the people of the 99th deserve better representation than that in Harrisburg, and that's why I'm running.
And the sad thing is, Brian, and I hope the folks in the 99th are listening and they get this, because the sad reality is Gordo didn't dream it up himself. This is not something that Gordo came up with. He wasn't in his you know, little writing den, you know, with his little thinking cap on. This is another one of those pieces of model legislation handed out by the likes of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, handed out by the extreme right wing of the Republican Party. Because this bill is propping up all around the country. Basically, he's just playing follow the leader.
If we allow extremists to dictate how we're going to move forward in the future, we're not really going to have a future to move forward to. I think that it's time for common sense. You know, Rick, I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent. Common sense needs to come back into this commonwealth.
Yeah.
And we need people to step up, no matter how hard it might be. You know, again, I said I'm running in a primarily Republican area. But at the end of the day, I care about what's good for the people. I care about common sense issues. We need to make sure that we don't try to pass laws that are going to infringe upon our rights. We want to make sure we give our citizens more rights. This whole notion that we're going to allow people from the outside, like ALEC, like the Koch brothers, to try to dictate what our commonwealth is about, I believe that the people of Pennsylvania, I believe that the people of Lancaster County, and the people of the 99th, they can see through that. They're better than that, and come November 4th, they're going to make the right decision.
I hope so. And along with that, the governor's mansion as well. And at this point, you know, they're, I don't know, but... I don't know if there's any Democrat yet that I would not rather have over Tom Corbett, just to be honest at this point. Or maybe just another Republican. Let's hit the reset button and move along. Last question I've got for you, Brian. You know, as you looked at what happened today, and, you know, the reason that people were out there, this paycheck deception, you know, they're calling it paycheck protection. But as I've been saying on the program, there's absolutely no protection. There's no protection from wage theft. There's no protection from hour theft. There's none of that stuff. This is merely an assault on people like you, teachers. And my question is, you know, when you see this, what does it make you think? I mean, if I were a teacher, I think I would want to, at this point, with all of the attacks and all of the innuendo and all the finger pointing, I would just go, you know, I want to leave. I want to go do something else.
Well, I'll tell you this. The most wonderful part about being a teacher is that despite all the noise from the outside, we do what we do. I would say the vast, vast majority of teachers do what we do because we know we're making a difference for kids. And that's why our teachers exist. We advocate for those kids. We advocate for the people who work with those kids. And that was something I really relished when I was the union president, that I was able to advocate for good people trying to make a difference for students and being able to advocate for hardworking teachers. And there's a lot of other hardworking Pennsylvanians, no matter what they do, trying to make a difference in the world. You know, we have a failed governor who keeps insisting on failed policies. But I think people are getting fed up. I think people are getting sick and tired. And we should have a rally like that we had today. We should have one of those every week, if not every day, to make sure that people hear our voices from now until November 4th saying enough is enough. Our kids deserve better. Our communities deserve better. Our families deserve better. And if you're not going to listen to us, then we're going to take our voices to the ballot box and make a difference.
I'm right there with you. Brian, it's always great having you on the program. Please come back early. Come back often. It's great to have people like you in the classroom. Thank you for being there and also running for office. I mean, the only thing my wife will allow me to do is run if I suggest that I'll ever want to stand for office. But good for you, and appreciate the time, man.
Thank you so much.
Again, the Twitter handle at FightForPA, and you can also email him at FightForPA@Yahoo.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com. And search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The counselor advised an informal setting, adding that it is, quote, an effective way to build a better relationship. That sounds like advice that a love counselor might offer to couples, but not so. This relationship is about money. The counselor is a lobbyist for the healthcare industry, and he was explaining the art of wooing Congress critters by paying several thousand bucks to spend a weekend with them at some posh resort in Vail, Key West, or other luxury getaway. By holding what are called destination fundraisers outside of Washington, lawmakers and lobbyists can spend quality time together as they ski, snorkel, and schmooze. It's a way to get some large chunks of a lawmaker's time, oozed the lobbyist, who had recently enjoyed 3 days at the Four Seasons Resort in Vail with five Republican House members, two of whom are on the committee that writes our health laws. But wait, wasn't there a big stink over golf junkets a few years ago, forcing Congress to prohibit lobbyists from paying for these back-alley affairs? Yes, but Washington believes that where there's a will, there's a workaround. Here's how this one works. The lawmakers' political committees pay for their travel, food, booze, and lodging, so these expenses, technically, are not gifts from lobbyists. In turn, the favor seekers come at their own expense, plus making legal donations to the members' re-election campaigns. The donations end up being three or four times the cost of the event, so the lawmakers pocket a nice wad of cash, while the lobbyists enjoy a weekend of making legislative whoopee. Since the donations and the event are considered, quote, separate transactions, it's all legal. See? This is Jim Hightower saying, neither do I. In fact, what I see is just another corrupt way for corporations to buy Congress. Who do they think they're fooling?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. You know, I really like Brian. I think he's going to be a good guy. I think he's going to be somebody that we definitely need to have sitting in the halls of power, someone who, you know, just a decent guy, just an average, everyday, working-class guy willing to stand up and fight for each and every one of you. And, you know, one of the things that gets me, you know, when I was at the Capitol today for the big rally where, you know, like I said, there were thousands of people there. And I'm going down to the entrances and, you know, talking to the police going, hey, you know, you got to let these people in. They're out there freezing their behinds off. You got to let these folks in. This is their capital. There's plenty of room here. You can let them in. And, you know, they're, no, no, we're not letting anybody into here. There's nobody getting in here. Except for the charter school people, which I thought was very odd. Now, look, I'm all in favor of letting the kids in. Because, you know, when parents brought all their kids out, because, oh, we love charter schools, yay. But when you talk to them, and this is the problem, when you talk to them, they go, well, you know, it's in my neighborhood. They closed the public school down. They put a charter school in. What do you want me to do? It's the closest to my house. I don't want my kids walking halfway across the city to get to school. So when you start looking at these charter schools, it's not so much that they're thrilled with the charter school. They're thrilled with neighborhood schools. They're thrilled with a school near their home. You know, like we used to do before this whole push to privatization, before this whole push to destroying public education. I just thought it was very interesting, though. That the charter school people got to walk in the door while the workers were standing out in the cold, freezing their behinds off. It said a lot. Said a lot to me. Anyway, today back in 1932, Wisconsin, the state whose motto is forward, even though since Governor Walker has taken over there as governor, it's been backward. Today in 1932, the first unemployment compensation law was enacted. I mean, 1932, not that all that long ago. The very first unemployment compensation law here in the U.S. And why was it pushed? Well, it was pushed because workers were saying, hey, we need some security. We need a floor under our feet. And, you know, as the president's giving his speech right now, you know, the idea is, you know, we need to be talking about how that floor is there for working people. Look, you know, there's a floor under the feet of the bankers and the billionaires. You don't ever see a billionaire go broke, do you? I haven't seen it. Sorry, just haven't seen it. As many times as Donald Trump may have filed for bankruptcy, I've never seen him homeless. You know, a lot of us think, you know, and how many people have seen the movie Trading Places with Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd? Do you remember in the first movie where, you know, they go in and the frozen orange juice and, oh, they get the crop report early and Mr. Biggs is, you know, sliding them the crop report. And, of course, it's intercepted by, you know, Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. And they go in and they take all the money they can raise and they put it the way the crop report says, but give the Duke and Duke guys the report that says it's the other way, and they bet all their money on it. And as Mortimer's having the heart attack, the guy who's the head of the exchange going, well, we need your money now, and we're going to take your seat on the exchange. I think a lot of people think that's how it is. That when our billionaire class makes a bad bet, that they lose all their money and, oh, they could end up on Skid Row waiting for a wad of cash like Eddie Murphy gave them in Coming to America. It doesn't happen that way. What happens is they've insulated themselves from real risk. We, you, me, the taxpayers, we've given them that security, that safety net. They never lose it all. Come on, get out of here. And you see them take on these companies and you see them destroy them so they can suck the pensions out of them and make the wages crummy. And then they saddle it. I mean, all you got to do is look at Romney. Saddle it with massive amounts of debt and then what? Cut it off to die through the bankruptcy courts. Now, look, we need people who are going to take risks. Absolutely. And I believe there should be a mechanism in place so that when they fall and they fail, that they don't smash on the ground, that they don't end up homeless. I don't want that for anybody. I don't want it for Mortimer Duke, Mitt Romney, or you or me. But here's the thing. If you're going to provide that giant soft feather pillow for our billionaire class and our investor class and for our entrepreneurial class, you got to do it for the working class. And the fact that we have not seen an unemployment compensation extension yet, the fact that we haven't seen the SNAP program extended yet, the fact that we haven't seen a jobs plan tells me that they don't care about the working class of this country. They don't care about the you and the me. They care about, well, those at the top. Because that's where the cash is, man. And the thing is there are so many things that we could be doing to make life better for working people. And look, you know, I get this all the time. Well, you don't like the rich people. That's not true. I like rich people. Someday I would love to be a rich person. Would love to. And I would love to pay high taxes so that I know that the school district is not starving. So that I know that the roads that I'm driving on are not going to destroy my car. And I know that the bridge that I'm going over is not going to collapse and I'm going to go in the drink. That I know that we have the best infrastructure in the world so that business can compete. So that they can locate into areas here in the U.S. I'm all on board with that, yes. But you don't do it at the expense of healthcare, education, and a future for workers. You just don't do it. And there are so many things that we could be doing. There are so many things we should have been doing after the Great Recession. You look at this massive inequality, and it is there. And I know that, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, we don't, that's being divisive. No, it's being realistic. When 85 people in this world control more wealth than half of the population, there's a problem. When you have a handful of people here in this country who control more wealth than half of the country, when you have a single family who controls more wealth than 40% of this nation, you have a problem. And what ends up happening is you look at that one family who made it through the birth canal and got their golden lottery ticket, the Walton sperm lottery winners. What have they actually contributed? Well, on their watch, more outsourcing, more Chinese products, a bigger trade deficit, more debt, and especially for American workers, much more debt. So I look at this and I keep asking the question, what's it going to take? What's it going to take for us to say enough is enough? And the reality is inequality is making our life much, much worse. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how it's making our lives worse. I'll also take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Right back after this.
Conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at therickssmithshow.com. And click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The counselor advised an informal setting, adding that it is, quote, an effective way to build a better relationship. That sounds like advice that a love counselor might offer to couples, but not so. This relationship is about money. The counselor is a lobbyist for the healthcare industry, and he was explaining the art of wooing Congress critters by paying several thousand bucks to spend a weekend with them at some posh resort in Vail, Key West, or other luxury getaway. By holding what are called destination fundraisers outside of Washington, lawmakers and lobbyists can spend quality time together as they ski, snorkel, and schmooze. It's a way to get some large chunks of a lawmaker's time, oozed the lobbyist, who had recently enjoyed 3 days at the Four Seasons Resort in Vail with five Republican House members, two of whom are on the committee that writes our health laws. But wait, wasn't there a big stink over golf junkets a few years ago, forcing Congress to prohibit lobbyists from paying for these back-alley affairs? Yes, but Washington believes that where there's a will, there's a workaround. Here's how this one works. The lawmakers' political committees pay for their travel, food, booze, and lodging, so these expenses, technically, are not gifts from lobbyists. In turn, the favor seekers come at their own expense, plus making legal donations to the members' re-election campaigns. The donations end up being 3 or 4 times the cost of the event, so the lawmakers pocket a nice wad of cash, while the lobbyists enjoy a weekend of making legislative whoopee. Since the donations and the event are considered, quote, separate transactions, it's all legal. See? This is Jim Hightower saying, neither do I. In fact, what I see is just another corrupt way for corporations to buy Congress. Who do they think they're fooling?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
So wake up in the morning, get to work and fight yourself. And then somebody tell you that you're owned by someone else. So what's it all about? It's money! Work it out!
Well, you better believe it. You better believe it's all about the money. And all of this talk about, oh, we care about our religious views and, oh, our values. Oh, at the end of the day, folks, pure and simple, bottom line, it's about the money. It's about how much they can put in their pocket and take from yours. Bottom line. And for me, everything comes back to that. We can have our debates about abortion. We can have our debates about gay marriage and all of those other things that they like to divide us with. They don't care about it one bit. And if you remember back during the Republican convention, when the Koch brothers, one of the Koch brothers was asked about it, I don't care about that. I don't care about that stuff. I care about the money. I care about the economic policy. That's what I care about. I care about business. How much for me, how little for you. That's it. Simple. And until we get that simple truth in our head, all of our policy, all of our legislation, everything is going to be skewed based on, oh, I feel that that is something that I wouldn't like. This Gordon Denlinger's piece of legislation, this idea that you can discriminate. And there are some folks who are okay with that. It's insane to me. And I look at to me, the issue of our generation is how do we rebuild that opportunity for working people? Look, there are enough people out there pushing on how to make rich people richer. There's enough of that out there. I want to make sure that people have at least the opportunity that I had growing up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, at least the opportunity that I had to work hard and to have that hard work rewarded and then have the opportunity to make a better life for my kids. That's the American dream. Yet what we see is this massive inequality, this massive redistribution of wealth. In fact, you know, you look at the numbers. The numbers are pretty simple. From 1979 to 2007, the top 1% of this country saw their real after-tax income jump by 278%. Now, the middle class, that middle 60%, saw their increase over that same period, less than 40%. I don't even know that's even close to inflation over that time period. And you see the CEOs of our country who have experienced some of the lowest tax rates in the country's history, and you go, you know, this is the problem. And understand that, you know, when you have this massive inequality, what it ends up fostering is more people going into debt. More people going, hey, you know, I got to put shoes on the kids. I got to get clothes for school. And, you know, I go back and I think about my own mother. And this is a story I've never told. And it's one of those things that kind of, you know, sticks in the back of your head. And you never really want to see anyone go through it. When my mother died back in September of 1980, right before school came, and we had done the school shopping and all of that stuff, And I remember her credit card bill from Sears. Because it was the only place that would give someone in our economic situation any type of credit. Because they could just abuse the heck out of you. I mean, the rates were, I'm sure, astronomical. And I remember after she died that they hounded my grandmother for payment. And it was really one of those things that you go, you know, it was almost cruel and sadistic. But when you have a situation where you have people living in poverty and the basic essentials for living are out of their reach, the only lifeline that they get, and this is why a lot of times I don't give too much you-know-what to people who get into credit card problems, because I can understand how it happens. Now, if you're making $60,000, $70,000 a year and you find yourself in big debt, you got a problem. But I understand that, you know, someone making in the $15,000 to $20,000 range going, you know what, I needed to get the kids stuff. I needed to put food on the table. I needed to pay the electric bill. I needed to just to be able to make it to next week. But you know what? When the check came, when my paycheck came, it was evaporated into everything else. And again, you throw this out. Being poor is really expensive. And you've got Republicans now pushing this payday lending nonsense. Still, they want it because they understand those poor people, they're going to get loans, high interest loans, lots of profit, and we can get them in the system and churn them. People like my mother who needed to make it to the next week when there was not there wasn't even ketchup in our house some days. And had you given her that lifeline to say, you know what, your kid's not going to go hungry today. Here's this lifeline, but you're going to have to sell your future down there, and we're going to take a bunch from you. She'd have grabbed it. Because then you start thinking about this moment. And as a country, we have got to stop thinking about this second right now and let people have a little bit of opportunity to say, you know what, maybe we're going to think about tomorrow. As well as today. But this destruction of wages in this country, this destruction of opportunity in this country, it's been a boon for the credit card industry. It's been a boom for the wealth class of this country because they've been able to profit from it at an alarming rate. And every time you look at it, who ends up with the money? Well, the very, very, very well. Very well to do. And what's frustrating to me, what's really frustrating to me, is there are so many people that need help, and we're just not doing it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
For and by We the Working People.
You are listening to
the
Rick
Smith Show.
97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The American Postal Workers Union is launching a national campaign protesting the outsourcing of mail services to Staples stores. Joined by community allies, the union is launching the protest campaign in San Francisco and San Jose, California. The union says USPS workers must staff the mail services being offered at Staples stores. USPS and Staples reached an agreement to open trial mail service operations in 80 Staples stores in Northern California, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, and Central Massachusetts. After the trial run, USPS plans to open mail service centers in 1,500 Staples stores nationwide. The union is protesting the outsourcing of mail work to Staples employees. Here's what AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka would like to hear when President Obama delivers the State of the Union speech Tuesday night.
I want to hear about a new push for big changes to make meaningful gains possible in the lives of typical working families. I want to hear about increases in the minimum wage. Proposal proposals for sick leave to help families and other measures to boost living standards, to help rebuild a strong middle class, and to stop the collapse of wages for working families.
Trumka and the Labor Federation want Obama to go far beyond that and achieve public infrastructure investment in the trillions of dollars to literally rebuild America while creating good middle class jobs. Trumka says the State of the Union today for working families isn't good.
The official unemployment rate in the U.S. is just under 7%, down from 10% at its peak, but still higher than at the worst of the 2001 recession. And 5 years after the financial sector meltdown, corporate profits are up, the stock market is way up, and median family income is down 4%.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says it and the Association of Professional Flight Attendants have reached agreement with the new American Airlines on bargaining for a joint contract. American merged with U.S. Airways. The two unions represent two groups of pre-merger flight attendants. AFACWA says the two unions will bargain a joint contract with American based on an agreement between the two unions on how the negotiations will proceed. AFACWA says based on the accelerated timeline in the agreement, all flight attendants at American will be reaping the merger's benefits by February 2015 at the latest. The union says that is an unprecedented timetable for airline mergers. The Move Minnesota campaign is pushing for a comprehensive transportation funding package from the state legislature this year. Supported by labor, the movement wants adequate transportation investments to enable Minnesota to properly maintain and improve transportation assets. That's an opportunity for all and create living wage jobs. Minnesota's Laborers District Council supports the campaign. It says nearly half of Minnesota's roads and bridges are listed in poor or mediocre condition, while only 10% of metro area jobs are accessible by public transit. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Volkswagen just invested in Tennessee, in a right-to-work state, at a low cost, with less health care. Why should we prop others up when other companies can compete in this marketplace? It's time to let these people learn the lesson the hard way.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, if you think anything of this paycheck deception or any of this right-to-work legislation that they're trying to ram through or any of the anti-worker bills, if you think that's got anything to do with, oh, we care about workers, you need to get your heads examined. I think Zach Womp, the congressman from Tennessee, hit it right on the head. It's about lower wages. It's about less health care. And above and beyond that, it's about silencing a segment of the population, a big segment, the working people of this country, and imposing their will. That's what it's about. And the rally today, to me, just was a huge moment in Pennsylvania labor history and something that I was glad to be there. And I'm glad a number of our listeners came and talked with me while we were there, especially the ones who were able to get in. Let's go to the phones. I've got our good friend Abe Amoros on the line, our Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union of North America, LIUNA. Abe, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome, Rick. Thanks for having me.
What an amazing event this morning.
That was incredible. I have never seen that many people crammed in the Capitol for any specific reason. I mean, that was just unbelievable. And like you said, it was historic. And, you know, some of the speakers, I got to tell you, Rick, I got chills listening to some of them because their message was so plain yet so compelling. I mean, you didn't have professional speakers up there spouting off of talking points. I mean, you had people just speaking from the heart, scribbling their own notes in their own hand and telling it like it is. And like you said, it was so crowded that there were even hundreds of people outside. I mean, I think there were two or three separate rallies.
Yep.
Simply because you couldn't get everybody in at the same time. And when I was leaving the building right after, they were still rallying outside and talking. So it was a proud moment for the labor movement in Pennsylvania, no question about it.
And the hope that I have, Abe, is that this will send the message to the Koch brother purchased legislature that calls themselves the Pennsylvania General Assembly, and that this insanity will stop. Because, you know, as I was talking to some of the labor people there, and maybe you have a better sense of it than I do, that this was the opening salvo. This will be every day if they have to until this ridiculous nonsense stops.
That's right, Rick. And I got to tell you, I'm hearing things from right-wing Republicans that are actually encouraging. Some of them are actually saying, well, geez, you guys are pushing a little hard here a little early. I mean, And one lady even went as far as saying, well, why don't we take a look at House Bill 1507 and maybe we can amend some of it. So you're starting to see some backpedaling. And for the first time, I heard a labor-friendly Republican actually say that this may not even come up for a vote. Now, Rick, I'm not that enthusiastic or that optimistic, but let me tell you, I mean, that's music to my ears, but we still need to remain vigilant. And if we have to do this every week or every day, I think you'll have the crowds because the labor movement has been awakened in Pennsylvania based upon what happened in Indiana, in Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And when it got to Pennsylvania, our leaders said, absolutely not. That's simply not going to happen here. So I've been impressed with the level of organization and the pardon the pun here, the noise level as well. I mean, that Capitol was about to explode today.
No
doubt about it. And it was historic, and I was proud to be there. And that's something I will remember for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you. I was disappointed in the fact that the police, the Capitol Police, didn't allow people to come in out of the cold. And yet, if you go to the back of the Capitol where the charter school advocates were, they were allowed to come in. The working people, they were left out to freeze. That kind of infuriated me.
Oh, absolutely, Rick. I mean, that just goes to show you that some of the priorities are askew. But it wasn't a good day to be outside in the first place. I mean, it was 6 degrees. And what kept those good people going was the fact that they were hot about the issue internally, and they were pumped up, and they were passionate about it. And I'll tell you, it's just going to be a very long time before I forget that.
Did you see the story in the Penn Live just before we went on air? I saw this story, and I talked about it a little earlier. The guy, did you see the truck driving around the Capitol, the guy with the sign on the back of it?
I did see him running around. I didn't see what he had on the back of it, though.
It was some poorly scripted message by the Commonwealth Foundation, something about Mike Vian and those union bosses.
Oh.
And I give them credit. They properly spelled everything, and that's a start. But this guy was from North Carolina.
Oh.
And what's interesting to me is he said, well, you know, those union thugs, they were calling me names, and they were, you know, he didn't want to press charges, so you got to wonder the validity of the claim. But he says that they may have touched his truck, which I doubt. But what I found interesting, from North Carolina, they couldn't get anyone from Pennsylvania to even drive the truck around to push this poison.
That's how pathetic this is, Rick. And, of course, we saw some clever signs in the Capitol as well that were being funded by outside sources. And ironically enough, one of our guys from the laborers got into a discussion with this fellow who was holding up this ridiculous sign. I won't even repeat it what it said, and said, oh, yeah, we don't like Tom Corbett either. We hope he loses. I'm thinking, I mean, what are you doing here? At least we got one thing in common, huh, that we don't like Tom Corbett. But I was amused when I heard that statement. I couldn't believe it. And like you said, look, if you have to pay people from North Carolina to make noise in Pennsylvania, something is wrong, definitely wrong. And, you know, the Koch brothers, they can't be happy campers today after what they saw in Pennsylvania.
Because, you know what, as someone who spent some time in Wisconsin during the uprising there, 100,000 people in their capital, I looked at this and I go, you know what, because to be honest with you, Abe, I didn't think it was something that was possible here. I'm telling you, I think it's possible.
Yes, that's right. That's absolutely right. We've got to stay vigilant. We've got to stay on our elected officials because money can change the playing field in a heartbeat. Now, Rick, what I'm hearing is that we have about 16 Republicans who are willing to vote no on this bill. However, the money has not even begun to flow into some of those districts. I have met with individuals, with legislators, who have had two or three mailings. One fella had 9 mailings in his district already that they're targeting him. I mean, heavily. So, you know, money can change the level playing field very quickly. So I'm not convinced that this won't come up. But I am heartened by the fact that the labor movement continues to meet on a weekly basis, led by the AFL-CIO at PSDA facilities, which is terrific because you've got over 850,000 members of the AFL-CIO, and then you have about 160,000 members of the PSEA. So that's over a million union families that are being affected by this. And I think you heard them loud and clear today that we're not going to stand still, we're not going to sit idle, we're not going to let the Koch brothers get away with it. Not without a big, big fight.
I'm with you, and it's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that there's unity and there's a moving forward to push back against this. Because as I've been saying to folks, you know, if they get this, and they make this sound so innocuous, oh, it's really nothing. And I listened to the bald guy who's the head of the Tea Party think tank there at the Commonwealth Foundation saying, oh, this is going to make the unions better. And I'm going, really? I'm going to have you out there fighting to make unions better? Really? Is that your intention?
You know, some of his logic is just absolutely ridiculous, Rick. I mean, I've gone head to head with him on television programs and on radio programs, and I don't know who's force feeding him these talking points. Somebody's putting all this garbage in front of him. And you know, our president of the AFL-CIO, Rick Bloomingdale, today eloquently pointed out, look, unions are transparent. We are at a public record. You're going to find out what our labor leaders make, but you're never going to find out who is funding the Commonwealth Foundation or the tripe that they're spewing, simply because they hide behind a 501c4 status. You know, they take advantage of every loophole there is out there, so they can get flooded and funded by all these outside interests and are completely immune to criticism from the public, and we're just not going to let them get away with it. You know, I mean, I look at these guys as you know, charlatans, no question about it. Look, when you really engage them in a conversation, you're not going to be able to reason with them. I mean, it's just attack, attack, attack. Everything to them is black or white. I mean, it's people walking around with black hats or white hats, good guys versus bad guys. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. But they get away with it, Rick. They get away with it on a daily basis, and this is why we have to talk to the members of the public, let them know that what the facts are about this, and let them know that no one is forced to join a union, and when they become union members, they're not forced to contribute to political campaigns. That's what the Republicans want you to think.
Right.
And this Cutler fella, this Representative Brian Cutler from Lancaster, I mean, I read his stuff, and I just walk away scratching my head thinking, I can't believe somebody actually put this in writing. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous.
Do you think he loves
the attention, Rick?
Yeah. Do you think they believe it, or do they just live in an alternative reality? I mean,
you know,
there's part of me that goes, they just live on a different planet.
I think they live on a different planet. I really do. I mean, I think that they believe some of the nonsense that they spew. Some of these guys like to hear their own voices, obviously. But man, I'll tell you know, they can't connect to the average person out on the street, and they represent these Republican conclaves. I mean, Brian Cutler is in one of the safest seats in America. In fact, Lancaster County is one of the safest counties in America, with the exception of the city of Lancaster, where Representative Mike Sterla is from. I mean, you're not going to find any Democrats outside of there, unfortunately. So, I mean, they can get away with some of these things. I'd say they have to be held accountable, because these Republicans in safe seats and safe districts, they're getting their bravado up. And when you don't call them out on one thing, they're going to say, oh, geez, well, I didn't get called out on that. Maybe I could go to this, and maybe I could go to that. So before you know it, you have three things that are flying out there, which are absolute garbage and nonsense, and nobody's calling them on it. That's why we have to hold them accountable, and that's why we have to keep making noise like we did today.
I'm with you. But, you know, here's the thing. I got to be honest. I would love to have the opportunity to sit here for 3 hours every night and just make stuff up. I mean,
it's easy, isn't it?
You know, everything that I say is factual based on because I said it. And
right.
What I also love is how the whole right wing validates themselves.
Right.
You'll get somebody like Cutler who'll write something, and then another one of his colleagues will cite him, and he's wrong. So now they're both wrong, and then someone cites the both of them. Now they're doubly wrong. But you know, this is just a doubling down on wrong, but they're creating this alternate universe of things that just aren't.
That's exactly right, Rick. And of course, they don't care about facts. They don't care about the truth. They care about spin. They care about talking points. And they're just a little too happy to take someone's money, lie, and not worry about it. That's what they're all about. That's what some of those House Republicans are all about in the right wing. The right wing is so wrong that it's not even funny.
And
they get away with it, Rick.
And that's why we need to figuratively smack them in the mouth. I'm not talking about literally. I'm talking figuratively here.
That's right.
We're not advocating for violence, but at some point, you got to put people in their place, which is why I was glad to see what happened today. I was glad to see you and all the other union and brothers and sisters out there. It was a fantastic day. And if they need to be back tomorrow, I'm assured that they will be. Abe, I appreciate the time, man. It's always great talking with you.
You got it. Anytime, Rick. Thank you.
Our good friend Abe Amoros, legislative director for LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
And they're talking in the town where it's happening.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The counselor advised an informal setting, adding that it is, quote, an effective way to build a better relationship. That sounds like advice that a love counselor might offer to couples, but not so. This relationship is about money. The counselor is a lobbyist for the healthcare industry, and he was explaining the art of wooing Congress critters by paying several thousand bucks to spend a weekend with them at some posh resort in Vail, Key West, or other luxury getaway. By holding what are called destination fundraisers outside of Washington, lawmakers and lobbyists can spend quality time together as they ski, snorkel, and schmooze. It's a way to get some large chunks of a lawmaker's time, oozed the lobbyist, who had recently enjoyed 3 days at the Four Seasons Resort in Vail with five Republican House members, two of whom are on the committee that writes our health laws. But wait, wasn't there a big stink over golf junkets a few years ago, forcing Congress to prohibit lobbyists from paying for these back-alley affairs? Yes, but Washington believes that where there's a will, there's a workaround. Here's how this one works. The lawmakers' political committees pay for their travel, food, booze, and lodging, so these expenses, technically, are not gifts from lobbyists. In turn, the favor seekers come at their own expense, plus making legal donations to the members' re-election campaigns. The donations end up being three or four times the cost of the event, so the lawmakers pocket a nice wad of cash, while the lobbyists enjoy a weekend of making legislative whoopee. Since the donations and the event are considered, quote, separate transactions, it's all legal. See? This is Jim Hightower saying, neither do I. In fact, what I see is just another corrupt way for corporations to buy Congress. Who do they think they're fooling?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hate is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, like I said, I wish I could sit here 3 hours every night and just make stuff up. And you see this on the right wing all the time. I was watching Michelle Bachmann and Bernie Sanders on with Wolf Blitzer on CNN. And Bernie's trying to make the point, going, look, you know, all of the things that the right wing keeps saying about, you know, tax rates and all of this is wrong. And Michelle Bachmann, and you got to give her credit, like any trained robot, able to spew on command talking points. And this is where the right always beats the left. They have no problem. They have no problem whatsoever with talking over people. They have no problem whatsoever and interrupting. And it's masterful. It's part of, I think, their training. I think it is, you know, how they're trained to do this stuff, where every word is, you know, we're gonna cut them off. Every word is, we're not going to let you finish your point, and to disrupt and to get people all worked up. Fairly interesting. And, you know, they get away with it. And they continually do it. Which, you know, I was watching Bernie in this segment, and I'm sure you could find it on the internet. At one point, I was about ready to go, you know, I'm just going to reach across the table and strangle her. Because every time he would start to speak, she would interrupt him. And he would say, excuse me, I'd like to finish a point. And she would just continue to interrupt and to continue to go after him. It's just, you know, it's, well, it is exactly what it is. Let's go to the phone lines. I got James on line one. How are you doing tonight, James?
Pretty good. Pretty good. As I said to the person at the phone, I'm a little late to the party. I was watching the State of the Union.
And what'd you think?
Sounded good. I was also playing around on Twitter. A lot of people said it sounded more like a laundry list than anything. Did mention the minimum wage. Made a mention to something about the size of a bank account versus the size of the vote. I mean that's all. It's all talk, though. I mean,
yeah.
Unless he were to do something like what Move for Men wants to do, or make a real effort to repeal Citizens United, it's all talk.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay.
So I saw you today at the rally, and good for you for being out. And I know you took a bunch of pictures. Anywhere we can take a look at them?
I will have them up tomorrow. I kind of got waylaid between the rally and getting back to my, I had a bunch of things to do between the rally and the house and getting back to my house.
Yeah, I hear you. So what did you think of the rally today?
I thought it went, first of all, I was not expecting that many people.
Yeah, there were a lot.
And remember, it wasn't a rally, it was a press conference.
Exactly.
Here's what I was saying, though. As I said, I've been checking up on that. Neither one of those bills is even up for committee. Is even up. If they try to do anything like that in the spring, it will look like the Capitol is being stormed.
And it should. I mean, at the end of the day, when you're talking about pushing the poison that they're pushing, you know, and it's going to affect, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of people's lives, if not hundreds of thousands of people's lives. In this Commonwealth, of course you're going to get people who are going to push back. And the more we explain what it is, I find the more people who would have been swayed by the seduction of just the name, paycheck protection, they'd be swayed by it. Once they find out what it is, they kind of go, there's no protection there. That's ridiculous.
I mean, that's been the last 3-odd years, you know. I mean, voters of Pennsylvania got sold a bill, maybe even the voters of America got sold a bill of goods, and now they're seeing the results of it. But, and I actually wondered, I wanted to mention something that, even though it's from the world of sports, can tie into the program.
Hit me.
Did you see what the students at Northwestern are trying to do?
Yes, I did, and good for them.
As you know, I mean, you walking around in a Denver Broncos jacket.
Hey, since I've been a little kid, man.
Oh, and you being I can imagine you being in Cleveland. That must have been dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, since 1976, I've been a Broncos fan.
All right. Hey,
There's a story that goes with that. I mean, the reality is I got to meet one of the Broncos players as a small kid. And, you know, he was nice to me, and I got to go to the game, which for a kid growing up in the projects was a huge thing. It was a huge deal, and that's who I began to follow. And then the next year, they ended up in the Super Bowl, so bang, there it was.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I thought it was fun to watch the guys on some of the guys on ESPN talk about it. I mean, I'm going to let you know how I see this, and this
Hit
is
me.
Really off. I would personally like to see the NFL create its own subsidized minor league.
Well, that's what they've got universities for. They're never going to do that. And look, look, at the end of the day, the University of Alabama, who thinks the greatest investment they ever made in the history of the university is the coach that they've got that coaches their football team, there's a problem there.
Exactly.
And you're never going to get the moneyed interest out of it. So I think these kids, by saying, you know what, consider us workers, because that's all we really are to this university and to this to college football.
But they don't get paid.
Well, they should be.
They don't get paid. They don't, I mean, and I'll let you know this. I mean, I started out at a Division III school. I transferred to where I graduated from. Okay? My next door neighbors were two lacrosse players.
Right.
One of them told me that, you know, he would love to work, you know, I don't remember the details, but I think there was a store nearby that sold lacrosse equipment. They had offered him a job. He had made sure it was on the level with the NCAA. There's one small problem. Time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in between school, in between classes and studying and practice. It's like, could there be another 2 hours in the day, please?
No, I mean, that's lacrosse. That's not one of the major, major sports where you're putting in hours and hours, to be the best that you can be. I mean, at the end of this, I'm in favor of making sure that these guys get paid, so that they can afford to buy a dinner on Friday night, or they have the ability to buy a suit if they need to, or if they need to get home for an emergency, can do it. I mean, the NCAA has just gotten completely out of hand, in my view.
And here's the other thing, and this is something one of the guys at ESPN mentioned. You know, you see these kids walking around, you know, with the $800 rings and that. It's like, sure, if you're paying them, now a lot of that money's above, now some of that money will be above the table.
Right.
Or on the table, shall we say. All right, you know,
with you.
Okay, I just wanted to touch base with you on that. As I said, I should have some of the pictures from that up tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Good. Send me a link, and we'll push some of them around.
Well, I can throw them up. I'll set the album up on my Facebook and link it to your page.
All right, a good deal.
And then all right. Well, you have a good evening.
You too, man. Appreciate it. It was great seeing you today. Thanks for stopping by and saying hello. And it's always great to see people coming out. I appreciate it, James. Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Firefighters, my friend. And the kids locked in the Capitol are fighting till the end. And we're not gonna break tonight. And we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down. But I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town. A union town. All down the line. This is a union town. A union town. All down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town. A union town. All down the line.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we bear.
You're listening to Win
Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises.
I'm Doug Cunningham.
The American Postal Workers Union is launching a national campaign protesting the outsourcing of mail services to Staples stores. Joined by community allies, the union is launching the protest campaign in San Francisco and San Jose, California. The union says USPS workers must staff the mail services being offered at Staples stores. USPS and Staples reached an agreement to open trial mail service operations in 80 Staples stores in Northern California, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, and Central Massachusetts. After the trial run, USPS plans to open mail service centers in 1,500 Staples stores nationwide. The union is protesting the outsourcing of mail work to Staples employees. Here's what AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka would like to hear when President Obama delivers the State of the Union speech Tuesday night.
I want to hear about a new push for big changes to make meaningful gains possible in the lives of typical working families. I want to hear about increases in the minimum wage, proposals for sick leave to help families and other measures to boost living standards, to help rebuild a strong middle class, and to stop the collapse of wages for working families.
Trumka and the Labor Federation want Obama to go far beyond that and achieve public infrastructure investment in the trillions of dollars to literally rebuild America while creating good middle class jobs. Trumka says the State of the Union today for working families isn't good.
The official unemployment rate in the U.S. is just under 7%, down from 10% at its peak, but still higher than at the worst of the 2001 recession. And 5 years after the financial sector meltdown, corporate profits are up, the stock market is way up, and median family income is down 4%.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says it and the Association of Professional Flight Attendants have reached agreement with the new American Airlines on bargaining for a joint contract. American merged with U.S. Airways. The two unions represent two groups of pre-merger flight attendants. AFA-CWA says the two unions will bargain a joint contract with American based on an agreement between the two unions on how the negotiations will proceed. AFA-CWA says based on the accelerated timeline in the agreement, all flight attendants at American will be reaping the merger's benefits by February 2015 at the latest. The union says that is an unprecedented timetable for airline mergers. The Move Minnesota campaign is pushing for a comprehensive transportation funding package from the state legislature this year. Supported by labor, the movement wants adequate transportation investments to enable Minnesota to properly maintain and improve transportation assets and opportunity for all and create living wage jobs. Minnesota's Laborers District Council supports the campaign. It says nearly half of Minnesota's roads and bridges are listed in poor or mediocre condition, while only 10% of metro area jobs are accessible by public transit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. And, you know, this whole attack on the Postal Service, this whole attack on the privatization, all of the attempts to destroy these good-paying, family-sustaining jobs, to me, is, you know, criminal on one level. I mean, you go back and you look at this nonsense that they were saddled with back in 2006, that they would have to pre-fund their health care almost a century in advance, 75 years into the future, prepaying it for people who aren't even born yet. Just to me, back then I said, this is the poison pill that's meant to destroy it. And now we're seeing that they want to. And I called this a while ago. I thought it would be Walmart that we would be going to. Evidently, it's going to be Staples. So you're seeing people coming out and saying, hey, I don't know that we want this. And I know out in San Francisco there are a bunch of postal workers saying, no. We want to protect our postal service. We want to protect the post office, and we want to protect our jobs and our community. And here to talk a little bit about it and, you know, fill us in on the details, I've got Mike Gallagher. He is Eastern Regional Coordinator for the APWU, the American Postal Workers Union, APWU.org, the website. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back on your show again, Rick. I appreciate it.
You know, I look at this and, you know, I've been saying for some time there's a push in this country to privatize everything that is ours, everything that belongs to we the people. And this is just another one of those moments, in my view, Mike, of the Daryl Issas of the world who are pushing this poison.
Well, you hit the nail on the head in your introductory comments, Rick, because the Postal Service really is involved in what I consider a manufactured crisis. The Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act passed in 2006, which you mentioned, which requires pre-funding retiree health benefits 75 years in the future in a 10-year window, has really caused the Postal Service significant financial anguish, paying $5.5 billion to the government before you sell that first stamp has really created the crisis that we're in. And now the Postal Service is using this financial crisis to say, well, what we need to do is to partner with other groups like Staples and pilot a post office in a number of sites throughout the country.
And this, to me, is designed specifically to destroy our neighborhood post offices, things that people go to for their P.O. boxes, people go to do their commerce, all of those things. And basically, in my view, to destroy this, what I would call a centerpiece of our community.
Yeah, the Postal Service really is a national treasure. You know, uniform rates throughout the country, delivery anywhere, and to have our mails being accepted by low-wage, non-union employees in Staples. I'd like to uplift their lot in life as well as a union person, but I don't like the fact that the Postal Service is allowing these individuals to take our good-paying union jobs away from our retail outfits. And in some of the pilot sites that they've opened up 82 pilot sites in Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, California and Georgia, and I've noticed the radiuses in which, particularly up in Massachusetts, the Staples stores are intimately located where post offices are at. So it's clearly going to drain away retail from the post office. And Staples have longer hours, they're open on weekends, and these are services that the Postal Service should be providing, expanding our own services instead of subcontracting them in a sense to these low-paying workers.
Yeah, I mean, it's about time someone says that. I mean, honestly, Mike, it's about time someone speaks up and says, if you're going to make us compete as a private sector business, allow us to compete, allow us to expand our hours, allow us to expand our services, allow us to take on new products and new opportunities for growth, which, you know, I look at the Postal Service, while it's not a public entity, it is controlled by Congress and, in my view, handcuffed and hampered by Congress.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Congress created our financial problem, and they can clearly fix it. We've been begging them for 3 years in each session of Congress to pass legislation. And you mentioned the key person, Darrell Issa, that controls the committee in the House that oversees postal legislation, has trapped us from getting any real reform going here. So that's caused our financial crisis. Now the Postal Service is using this manufactured crisis to essentially give away our jobs. And it's a real concern. I mean, the poor, low-paid, non-union workers in Staples are now charged with the duty of taking care of the safe sanctity and the security of the mail, something that postal employees take an oath to protect that mail. And I should mention that, you know, Staples isn't the, you know, Staples is a questionable, while they're very large, they've got almost 1,600 stores throughout the United States and Canada. They've been sued a number of times by their own employees because they've forced them to work overtime without paying them. In 2012, they had to pay out $42 million, and years earlier than that, they paid out another $38 million in class action lawsuits to employees that were forced to work overtime but weren't paid. So they're not exactly a model employer. And the federal government should be setting the standard for what, you know, work standards should be.
Absolutely. And a standard of what, how to get into the middle class. And I look at, you know, this whole scheme, and I think it's basically what we've seen the conservative ideology become. It's not about values, or it's about how much money can they extract from me and you and the people who work for a living and punch a clock and collect a paycheck to put into people's pockets who sit around all day and move. The hardest work they do is moving money from one pocket to the other.
So true.
So I look at this, and you know, the reality is, and I think you've hit on it masterfully this idea that we're going to take good-paying family-sustaining jobs and turn them into retail jobs, which, you know, could be good-paying family-sustaining jobs if those folks were able to join and form unions, and like my grandparents' generation did. Those could be good jobs, but right now they're not. And those, that, to me, that's what's weighing back our economy and weighing down the advancement for folks in the middle class or people who to get into the middle class.
I couldn't agree more. We consider this a direct assault on our jobs and on the public postal service. And, you know, Staples is a for-profit industry, whereas the postal service is not. We only operate on the revenues that are brought in through stamp and postal products. We get no tax relief whatsoever, and that's the way it should be. But to have this amount of work and profit siphoned off to a private company, it's just further going to hamstring the postal service financial condition, we believe.
So here's the other thing that bothers me, Mike, and I'll be quite frank about it. I feel secure that the post office is going to be around. I feel secure that we, the people, as part of our commons, we will make sure that it's there tomorrow. I don't know that I have that warm, fuzzy feeling about Staples or any retail chain in this country, to be honest, that they're going to be here tomorrow or the day after. And I worry that the investment we're making is going to harm us, and the disinvestment that we're making in maintaining our own infrastructure will destroy the post office down the road.
Well, it shows like yours and getting the word out to the public that you know, it's an essential service you're providing, Rick, and letting the public know that their public postal service is essentially being dismantled. And you're exactly right that while some of these Staples are opening up postal units close to other postal units, we already see that the postal service is earmarking post offices, brick-and-mortar post offices, for closure. Our concern is that they're going to close the one in this community where there's a Staples. And we don't know what's going to happen with Staples over the years. Will it go the way of Circuit City or Office Max? If so, then you don't have a post office in that town. And I think that the American public just is not going to stand for that, or I hope they wouldn't stand for this first step in that direction.
But don't you think we've been sold this idea that, well, you know, times are tough, we're broke, we don't have the money, so we have to accept lower standards, lower expectations. Sorry, you know, the luxury of having a local post office or a local elementary school or a local high school, those are days gone by. We just don't have the money. Do you think we've been sold that, and do you think some folks are buying into it?
Oh, there's no doubt that that is the mantra of many of the super wealthy in the United States, that, you know, we need to get rid of these public services. They can be done cheaper by private groups. But then we're seeing these private for-profit groups just siphoning off the money, not paying the workers. They have high worker turnover, and it's the erosion of the middle class.
Is the goal here privatization, do you think?
Well, I think this is a step in that direction. I do think that the Postmaster General is aligned with those that would privatize the Postal Service. So, yeah, we're deeply concerned about it. I mean, when you talk about the super wealthy, remember I told you about Staples being sued by a number of their employees to the tune of $80 million in a couple different lawsuits. Well, Staples is among the 50 largest low-wage employers in the country. So that is not a good thing, that our company stands for the proposition that we're in the top 50 of underpaying our workers, yet the CEO there made $6.5 million last year. So, once again, it's the concern about the rich versus the poor and the compression of the middle class.
Let me ask you this, then. I mean, since you brought up the amount that the CEO there at Staples Max, which is, in my view, obscene, what did the CEO of the Postal Service make?
The Postmaster General was the chief operating officer. I think his compensation package is just under $1 million.
So there's a sizable difference there.
Yes.
And I would even argue that I don't know that that's low enough. I you know, you're thinking about $1 million, an awful lot of money to do a job. But, you know, at least at some level you're going, the difference between the guy who's running the place and the guy who's actually doing all the work isn't all that great when you look at the difference between the CEO at Staples and their employees, which the gulf is huge.
Yeah, agreed. And when I said that PMG, that's his wage and benefit package totally, although that is quite a chunk of change, he runs a significantly larger outfit.
Right.
I mean, the United States Postal Service is in every hamlet and farm, and we would hope it would stay that way.
I got two more questions for you. You know, the first one being these protests that we're seeing. I'm hoping that we'll see an expansion of this and to raise awareness for folks to participate and to have their voices heard, because I don't remember getting any input into whether we were going to be privatizing my post office. So I'm curious how the protests are going, how these actions are going.
Well, we're taking more or less, I would say, a four-pronged action, right? What we have is we've asked our locals, which, you know, cover the country, to go to every Staples store and to deliver a letter to the manager at that store, to asking their manager to alert their corporate headquarters and their CEO, Ron Sargent, that we're not happy with the Postal Service and Staples partnering to take our jobs away for all the reasons that we previously talked about. So that has pretty much been accomplished. Many of our locals have been very active in going and serving the message. Staples has already apparently put out some corporate edicts telling them to usher our people out of the store as soon as they come in because they're hip to what we're starting to do. But now we're having protests. The second prong is having protests at select pilot sites. Remember, they've opened up 82 pilot sites, and we're starting focusing our attention right now in California. There were protests today in San Francisco and San Jose, and we got, you know, massive participation of postal workers. We've also rallied with a number of other unions, and one union that I'd like to throw a shout-out to is the teachers union, and the reason for that is that they're very supportive of us, number one. But number two, they buy a lot of products, as you know,
yep,
in these different Staples stores. So they've become an ally because as we ratchet up the pressure, the next thing we're going to do, prong number three, is a national day of action where we're going to go to all of the Staples stores and have protests. And then finally, if that doesn't get the attention of Postmaster General of the United States, Pat Donahoe, and CEO Ron Sargent of Staples, then we're going to encourage people to actively be involved in boycotts of Staples. So we were hoping that the letter campaign would be enough. Now we're hoping that protests select pilot sites would be enough, but we're prepared to take more long-term sustained actions if required.
And as that continues down the road, if it has to, you know you've got a friend here at the Rick Smith Show. We will help in any way we can. Last question I've got comes from Andy, who sent me an email during the last couple of minutes. He said, what if Staples is taken over by a foreign entity? And that's something I had not thought of until Andy sent me the email. What happens if the Chinese decide, you know what, the post office seems like a good investment, especially if it's owned by Staples is, the Staples is a good investment, especially with all that postal work.
Wow, that's a wild scenario. I hadn't even envisioned that, but that is a great question. That is a great question.
Well, maybe it's something we should have thought of before we started opening up pilot programs in the local Staples.
Yeah, I mean, if you consider, you can remember when Mitt Romney was running for election, he was holding Staples up as the model of how he was not a corporate vulture because that organization seemed to be doing so well, but we know the reality of the situation is that they really treat their workers really badly.
Yeah, it's sad stuff. But again, anytime, come back, talk to us. I want to know how this is going so we can keep our listeners informed and help where we can. Mike, always great talking with you.
Yeah, always a pleasure being on your show, Rick. Keep up the good work and advancing the cause for working people. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Mike Gallagher, Eastern Regional Coordinator for APWU, the American Postal Workers Union. Their website, apwu.org. You can get there from our website at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Mike's name. It'll take you right there. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Yeah. Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The counselor advised an informal setting, adding that it is, quote, an effective way to build a better relationship. That sounds like advice that a love counselor might offer to couples, but not so. This relationship is about money. The counselor is a lobbyist for the healthcare industry, and he was explaining the art of wooing Congress critters by paying several thousand bucks to spend a weekend with them at some posh resort in Vail, Key West, or other luxury getaway. By holding what are called destination fundraisers outside of Washington, lawmakers and lobbyists can spend quality time together as they ski, snorkel, and schmooze. It's a way to get some large chunks of a lawmaker's time, oozed the lobbyist, who had recently enjoyed 3 days at the Four Seasons Resort in Vail with five Republican House members, two of whom are on the committee that writes our health laws. But wait, wasn't there a big stink over golf junkets a few years ago, forcing Congress to prohibit lobbyists from paying for these back-alley affairs? Yes, but Washington believes that where there's a will, there's a workaround. Here's how this one works. The lawmakers' political committees pay for their travel, food, booze, and lodging, so these expenses, technically, are not gifts from lobbyists. In turn, the favor seekers come at their own expense, plus making legal donations to the members' re-election campaigns. The donations end up being three or four times the cost of the event, so the lawmakers pocket a nice wad of cash, while the lobbyists enjoy a weekend of making legislative whoopee. Since the donations and the event are considered, quote, separate transactions, it's all legal. See? This is Jim Hightower saying, neither do I. In fact, what I see is just another corrupt way for corporations to buy Congress. Who do they think they're fooling?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. You know, why is it? That's a good question. Why is it that so many lose while so few win? And, you know, you look at the game that is our politic. Seems rigged. I mean, all of the money that goes into pushing this poison, like this paycheck deception, all of the poison to destroy our postal service. I mean, do we really want to live in a Walmart staples nation? Really, I mean, honestly and truthfully, do we want to live in a nation where the best you're going to do is 8, 10, 12 bucks an hour, maybe some benefits that you might not be able to afford? That's the world the Romneys and that ilk want to push. And I look at this push towards destroying our postal service. And Andy has a great question. What happens if the Chinese take over Staples? What happens if they now control our postal service? They control how our commerce happens. I mean, stop and think about that for a bit. You know, and look, the people pushing this poison, they don't care. They're heartless. It doesn't matter to them. It's not going to matter. Because to them, it's all about, hey, How little can I put in my pocket out of this? And to me, this whole move towards Staples Nation, just make, or Walmart Nation, or fast food nation, or any of this, the low wage economy, keeps us moving in one direction, towards greater and greater inequality. And you know, as we talked about earlier, you know, the reality is, income inequality has made the American workforce indebted. And while we're no longer working for company script, while we're no longer indebted to the company store, we are indebted to the, well, to the Visas and the MasterCards and the store cards. The 21st century company store. 21st century script. And the reality is income inequality is making us sicker because we're not able to see doctors. We're not able to I saw this interesting statistic. And it was one of those things put out by the Harvard School of Public Health. They found that, and it's one of those things that just made me stop in my tracks. It's one of those things that, you know, you go, the very well-to-do, they seem to live a lot longer than the guy who's out there working on the railroad, the guy swinging a hammer, building the houses, the guy holding on to the steering wheel, driving the truck. And the life expectancy, I mean, it's amazing to me. Life expectancy of male workers who retire at 65 has grown by 6 years at the top half of the income distribution. The bottom half, only by 1.3 years. So you go, based on how much money you make, depends on much longer you're going to live. And you go, well, that's because, well, they don't eat right. Well, they can't afford it. Well, that's based because they don't take care of themselves. This is, they're working 50, 60 hours a week. They don't get regular checkups because they don't have the same kind of health care. They don't get preventative care. Now, thanks to the Affordable Care Act, some of that is there. But even still, how many people are going to be able to afford it? Because you do know that the conservatives in Congress are going to do everything they can do to destroy that. And it's, to me, one of those moments where we as a working class had better wake up and look around and ask the question, where do we fit in? Where is it for us? Where are our priorities? Because when I look at myself, you know, and I always ask that question, and I've told this to numerous people, because I think it was brilliant. I think my high school government teacher was absolutely brilliant when he said, someone had asked him, you know, how do I know which party I belong to? How do I know which party, which views I subscribe to? And he said, at the end of the day, it's pretty simple. At the end of it, no matter what they say, no matter what issues, the rhetoric they throw out, the Republicans are always going to be for the very, very wealthy, and the Democrats are going to be for the very, very poor. And you have to decide which. Now, understand, this is back in the mid-80s. That has changed a little bit. Democrats have moved more to the right, so it's a little hairier than this. But he said, look, you know, Republicans are going to be for the very wealthy. Democrats are going to be for the very poor. And you folks in the middle, you're going to pay for both of them. Understand that. But the question then becomes, which are you closer to? Are you closer to being rich or are you closer to being poor? Are you closer to being the one who is benefiting from the public need, the public good, or the one who's going to have to pay for them at the very top and not get them? And I think he was spot on right. I just, you know, it is what it is. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. Stitcher on the smartphone. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The American Postal Workers Union is launching a national campaign protesting the outsourcing of mail services to Staples stores. Joined by community allies, the union is launching the protest campaign in San Francisco and San Jose, California. The union says USPS workers must staff the mail services being offered at Staples stores. USPS and Staples reached an agreement to open trial mail service operations in 80 Staples stores in Northern California, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, and Central Massachusetts. After the trial run, USPS plans to open mail service centers in 1,500 Staples stores nationwide. The union is protesting the outsourcing of mail work to Staples employees. Here's what AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka would like to hear when President Obama delivers the State of the Union speech Tuesday night.
I want to hear about a new push for big changes to make meaningful gains possible in the lives of typical working families. I want to hear about increases in the minimum wage, proposals for sick leave to help families and other measures to boost living standards, to help rebuild a strong middle class, and to stop the collapse of wages for working families.
Trumka and the Labor Federation want Obama to go far beyond that and achieve public infrastructure investment in the trillions of dollars to literally rebuild America while creating good middle class jobs. Trumka says the State of the Union today for working families isn't good.
The official unemployment rate in the U.S. is just under 7%, down from 10% at its peak, but still higher than at the worst of the 2001 recession. And 5 years after the financial sector meltdown, corporate profits are up, the stock market is way up, and median family income is down 4%.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says it and the Association of Professional Flight Attendants have reached agreement with the new American Airlines on bargaining for a joint contract. American merged with U.S. Airways. The two unions represent two groups of pre-merger flight attendants. AFA-CWA says the two unions will bargain a joint contract with American based on an agreement between the two unions on how the negotiations will proceed. AFA-CWA says based on the accelerated timeline in the agreement, all flight attendants at American will be reaping the merger's benefits by February 2015 at the latest. The union says that is an unprecedented timetable for airline mergers. The Move Minnesota campaign is pushing for a comprehensive transportation funding package from the state legislature this year. Supported by labor, the movement wants adequate transportation investments to enable Minnesota to properly maintain and improve transportation assets an opportunity for all and create living wage jobs. Minnesota's Laborers District Council supports the campaign. It says nearly half of Minnesota's roads and bridges are listed in poor or mediocre condition, while only 10% of metro area jobs are accessible by public transit.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And by the way, what we shouldn't do, I just got to say this, what we shouldn't be doing is trying to take away your rights to bargain for better wages are working today. You shouldn't be doing that.
State of the Union address, and I'll see it when I get home. I'm sure C-SPAN will have it there for my entertainment. But I can almost guarantee nothing in the speech today about the Employee Free Choice Act. And if you want to talk about how to solve inequality, you want to talk about how to get the economy going, get money into people's pockets, give them the benefit of bargaining for better wages, hours, and conditions. Give them the opportunity to get some of the profits that they create. I mean, I look at Wall Street and never happier. Fat and happy, never better. Profits, never better. Bonuses, never better. The world is rosy, and it's all green lights for Wall Street. Main Street, man, it's under construction. There are little cones everywhere, and the lights are flashing red. And to me, how we fix that? Giving people the right to organize. Quick, very simple to me. Anyway, here to help us go through a little bit of the speech, you know, tell us what happened. Our good friend Craig Harrington, he's economic researcher over at Media Matters for America. Craig, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm gonna go way out on a limb here and say that no talk of as campaign Obama did, no talk of workers joining and forming unions.
The Employee Free Choice Act that you just referenced is actually not specifically mentioned, though there actually were some promising discussions of potential executive action and legislative potential in the 2014 session, but the specific example of the Employee Free Choice Act did not come up.
So what was in it? I understand there was some talk about raising the minimum wage. There was some talk about doing some other things. What do you have to say?
Well, it was an interesting speech in that President Obama was able to line out some of the policy initiatives that he has espoused over the past 12 months and really over the past 5 years. The problem is what we saw in 2013 in the State of the Union was President Obama taking a stance and advocating things like immigration reform and lifting the minimum wage and various other things that didn't get through Congress. Unfortunately, the Congress hasn't changed in 2014, or at least the ability of that Congress to work with the president on initiatives hasn't changed. So he has announced just today executive action to take a move on the minimum wage and increase the federal minimum wage for all federal contract employees who are signing new contracts. That'll be helpful for people who are bargaining for new contracts who are currently making less than $10.10 per hour. And, of course, everyone who's hired onto a new federal position has to make at least $10.10 per hour. So that's a small step in the right direction.
Right.
But it's still far short of the Miller-Harkin proposal. You know, if President Obama is able to get this executive action fully implemented, it will affect hundreds of thousands of Americans, which is important. But the Miller-Harkin proposal, if you look at the Economic Policy Institute and various other outside economic research on the minimum wage, their proposal to increase the federal minimum wage nationwide to $10.10 per hour affects almost 28 million people. So the president is able to do a small step, but really we do need Congress to act. And unfortunately, you know, the media angle has been that President Obama, with executive action and executive orders, is only offering half measures. Very rarely is it brought up that Congress isn't acting, and that begins with how.
Right. No, I'm with you. And, you know, the thing is about time. My first thought is about time. Maybe, you know, doing some of the things you can that you could have done should have been something you did, a couple of years back. But I guess it's never too late.
Yeah. And in fact, if you are able to increase the minimum wage, you know, I had the pleasure of talking with Representative George Miller and Senator Tom Harkin at the Economic Policy Institute a couple of weeks ago regarding this proposal. And, you know, if you take the action now and increase the minimum wage standard to $10.10 and then you chain it to inflation so that it increases every year as a sort of cost of living adjustment, to account for whether or not inflation goes up, or in some cases that we've seen just in the recent past, just 6 years ago, inflation went down. You would have a federal minimum wage that was always tied at a level that was above poverty. They chose $10.10 per hour because that is above the federal poverty measure. According to their metrics, they thought that $9 per hour, which was President Obama's 2013 minimum wage proposal, they thought that actually could lock in some workers at sub-poverty wages. So if we're able to put it at $10.10 per hour, index it to inflation, and have it just increase automatically, it's no longer a political football. Democrats are no longer able to give speeches about it, no longer able to get applause about it, and Republicans no longer have to take flack on it. So it's a really easy proposal when you look at it from the basics, but the problem is it's not being looked at that way in Congress, much less in the media.
Yeah, you know, and I look at this, and, you know, he had said from the excerpts that I saw, the transcripts, that, you know, this is a call to action, to be able to, give people opportunity. And, you know, to me, that this one little thing, I think is a step in the right direction. But I think you're absolutely right. It's gotta be Congress, and we've gotta be putting pressure on Congress. I mean, and the thing that I think that the right does masterfully is they point all the problems to him. And the reality is this guy inherited a steaming pile of you-know-what when he took office, and on top of that, had an entire political party whose goal was to make him a one-term president and to make him fail.
Yeah, you know, a few years ago when you and I first started talking about this, we were talking about the economy in crisis. You know, finance was collapsing, jobs were being hemorrhaged out of the economy. You know, we're losing 800,000 jobs a month when President Obama took office. Now, you know, he's struggling to get these high-tech manufacturing hubs through Congress. Through executive order, he was able to create one in Raleigh, North Carolina, and one not far from you, well, not too far from you, in Youngstown, Ohio. But if Congress would just act on the bipartisan bills that are sitting there, sitting in the House and sitting in the Senate, we could have six or eight more of them created in 2014. That's the policy he lined out in his speech. But, you know, no one in the media is holding members of Congress to account for the fact that this is simple measures. You know, there's bipartisan support for manufacturing hubs, particularly in the Rust Belt, you know, where I hail from, where you hail from. But these things are getting held up for political reasons, and there's just no media pressure on it.
Yeah, I look at this. You know,
manufacturing infrastructure, it's across the board.
Yeah, you bring up manufacturing, and the right is, you know, you brought up the Rust Belt. You know, they've written off places like Detroit and Cleveland. In fact, you've heard an awful lot of rhetoric, you know, demonizing Detroit. I think Laura Ingraham just said, well, we should wall the whole thing off and put all the immigrants in there. And there was the guy not too long ago who said, they should fence it all off and put Indians on, make it a reservation. And all of this radical right-wing rhetoric, that, you know, I gotta think that the mainstream of America has gotta be going, wow, where did this fringe, how did they come to power?
Well, one of the things you notice, you know, Laura Ingraham made her comment about putting immigrants in Detroit and walling them off, in part as a response to a policy proposal where people wanted to make Detroit a sort of immigration center. If you increase the immigration quotas for the United States and then send those people to Detroit, they'll sort of build economic demand and foster a consumer engine in that depressed city. And it's, of course, fairly easy and cheap to buy houses and invest in real estate in Detroit because of the depressed economy. So it's a win-win for immigrants who are looking for a place to live and for the city who's looking for population and a consumer engine. But, you know, when she makes this comment on her radio station, people don't realize that a lot of these right-wing radio stations, you know, their advertisers don't really listen into the content that they're putting their money behind. One of the things that we noticed in the Flush Rush campaign that started just a few years ago is a lot of his advertisers, like Subway and others, they don't listen to the inflammatory, hateful rhetoric that they're putting their advertising dollars behind. So something like what Laura Ingraham said, it might inflame her right-wing listener base, and it might cause an organization like ours, Media Matters, to put a response together. But it doesn't really affect her bottom line so long as she has those advertising dollars flowing in.
Yeah, I how well I know. You know, because we struggle with that here every day. But here's the thing, and I'm going back to the speech. You know, I'm not a big fan of the trade policies. Anything on there, any talk of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement, any of this? Because I gotta think that he knows that there's no support for this thing.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership was not specifically mentioned by name, but it's interesting you bring this up because we're actually hoping to put together a research item at Media Matters in the next week or so regarding how little coverage the Trans-Pacific Partnership and to some extent the Trade Promotion Authority, what we know as Fast Track Provisional Authority, just how little media coverage that has actually gotten. You know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a free trade agreement much more valuable than the North American Free Trade Agreement. And the Trade Promotion Authority, or Fast Track, is something that's certainly a political hot potato on the right and the left. But in the media, it's not very well covered. In this speech, it was given about a sentence and a half of a conversation. President Obama, as his prerogative as the president to try to increase the power of his office, he wants to have a bipartisan Trade Promotion Authority pass through Congress. But it's really on Congress to decide whether or not they want to hold on to that bit of legislative power. The Constitution, as you know, gives Congress the power to promote trade and to negotiate trade agreements. They've just abdicated or given away that power to the president for the last four decades or so, primarily because it's just easier.
Now, and I've been telling people, you got to call your member of Congress and say, do your job. So since you watched the speech, I know they do a bunch of shout-outs. I was curious if there was any shout-out to the Schmuck Dynasty guy.
There wasn't, actually. One of the Duck Dynasty people was a guest of, I believe, a GOP representative and was in the gallery.
I believe it was Jim DeMint.
Yes, it was Jim DeMint, the president of the Heritage Foundation. But he wasn't given much coverage on most of the media outlets that I briefly looked at, though. You know,
I mean, doesn't that send a message that, you know, they would pull somebody that divisive into that arena that is going to do nothing but cause a distraction?
Well, it's not the first time that representatives have brought in individuals who were very divisive. You had Texas Congressman Steve Stockman last year in the State of the Union invited Ted Nugent.
Right.
And, you know, just a few months before, Ted Nugent had been arguably advocating violence against the president. And, you know, he said that if President Obama had been reelected by April of 2013, he'd either be dead or in jail. And there he was in January of 2013. Sitting in the House gallery watching the State of the Union address. So it's certainly not uncommon or unprecedented for people to bring very divisive political characters to the State of the Union.
So I guess the question is did he make good on his promise? Is he dead or in jail?
Ted Nugent has, of course, not made good on that promise.
All right.
I
knew that.
For better or worse, I guess.
There you go. Last question. Overall, what did you think of the speech? Where does it fit in comparison to the past ones? Did you get out of it what you thought you were going to get out of it? Was it what was predicted?
I actually thought the speech was fairly strong. It was as strong as it could possibly be, considering the sort of unprecedented obstacles and obstruction that President Obama faces in Congress, and then with an entire media sphere sort of enabling that kind of obstruction. You know, one of the sort of stronger moments of the speech was when President Obama said climate change is a fact. And, of course, what we saw from the right-wing media were various Fox News and right-wing conservative radio hosts taking to Twitter and immediately tweeting about how cold it is in Washington, D.C. and how it's actually snowing outside. So they thought it was ironic that he would take such a definitive stance on climate change, but those sorts of strong advocacy in favor of climate change, in favor of equal pay for women, in favor of universal pre-K for children, and then a spirit of defense of Obamacare was actually quite strong. And once again, the GOP responses from the official GOP response from Kathy McMorris Rogers, and then the Tea Party Express response from Senator Mike Lee left a lot to be desired. Though Mike Lee did coin the term inequality Godzilla for Obamacare, which I'm definitely going to try to work into a blog at some point.
No, you got to use that, and I'm sure he didn't think that one up on his own.
Yeah, I don't know how you focus group Inequality Godzilla, but it made it through.
All right, Craig Harrington, I appreciate the time. Thanks for your input and your thoughts. Great talking with you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
10% of people own 90% of the wealth. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the world.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Oh, 10% of the people own 90% of the world.
Tales of American Political History with Clinton Porter Hackney.
We've been talking about the championship boxing match in 1964 that changed American sports, culture, and politics. Sonny Liston was the heavyweight champion at the time and was being challenged by 22-year-old loudmouth publicity seeker Cassius Clay. Though Clay had been knocked down in two professional fights and was expected to be annihilated by Liston, he had won a medal in the Olympics, and he had not lost as a pro. It all began at the weigh-in where the boxers face each other and qualify in the correct weight category. Until this fight, the weigh-ins were boring non-events. But at this one, the challenger, Cassius Clay, began taunting his opponent when they arrived at the scales. Clay called Liston a big ugly bear and said, "He even smells like a bear. After I beat him, I'm going to donate him to a zoo." Join us again for a revolution. This is Clinton Porter Hackney at cphackney.com.
The counselor advised an informal setting, adding that it is, quote, an effective way to build a better relationship. That sounds like advice that a love counselor might offer to couples, but not so. This relationship is about money. The counselor is a lobbyist for the healthcare industry, and he was explaining the art of wooing Congress critters by paying several thousand bucks to spend a weekend with them at some posh resort in Vail, Key West, or other luxury getaway. By holding what are called destination fundraisers outside of Washington, lawmakers and lobbyists can spend quality time together as they ski, snorkel, and schmooze. It's a way to get some large chunks of a lawmaker's time, oozed the lobbyist, who had recently enjoyed 3 days at the Four Seasons Resort in Vail with five Republican House members, two of whom are on the committee that writes our health laws. But wait, wasn't there a big stink over golf junkets a few years ago, forcing Congress to prohibit lobbyists from paying for these back-alley affairs? Yes, but Washington believes that where there's a will, there's a workaround. Here's how this one works. The lawmakers' political committees pay for their travel, food, booze, and lodging, so these expenses, technically, are not gifts from lobbyists. In turn, the favor seekers come at their own expense, plus making legal donations to the members' re-election campaigns. The donations end up being three or four times the cost of the event, so the lawmakers pocket a nice wad of cash, while the lobbyists enjoy a weekend of making legislative whoopee. Since the donations and the event are considered, quote, separate transactions, it's all legal. See? This is Jim Hightower saying, neither do I. In fact, what I see is just another corrupt way for corporations to buy Congress. Who do they think they're fooling?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a bad case of turning it up. It's been cold in here, surviving up. I got a bad case of turning it up. It's been cold in here, so somebody find it up.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therixsmithshow.com. A couple of emails during the break saying that they thought the president's speech was fantastic. On point, the idea that, hey, we're going to raise the minimum wage and raise standards for some workers, a step in the right direction, this idea of restoring opportunity. And look, you know, as one person pointed out, finally going to take some advice from me, as I said from the very beginning of his presidency, be the guy who saves the reward of work. That's all I want. Simple stuff. And the Employee Free Choice Act, but I guess that didn't make it into the speech. Anyway, here from the speech, the place where it happens, we've got our good friend Ellen Ratner on the line. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you so much. We are actually here in Statuary Hall in Congress, so we are, it's a very busy place, lots of members of Congress giving interviews, talking about whether they thought the speech was a winner or not a winner. And you know, depending on which side of the aisle you come from.
Yeah, did the Schmuck Dynasty guy make it into any?
One of our people did get the Duck Dynasty guy, I guess. He showed up here, and apparently he was spoke with such a heavy accent, he was you could not understand a word he was saying.
Huh. I wonder if that shtick, because I'm told on the show it's not so bad. And he was able to make those comments that he made in a fairly understandable way.
Who invited him? Did you ever figure that out?
It was Jim DeMint.
Really?
Yes.
That is just wild.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, when you're the head of the Heritage Foundation, you know, you've got some pull, some clout.
Right, I guess so. That is pretty wild. Okay, so I just want to make a couple comments about the speech. First of all, we watch it so that we see what people on TV do. And one of the things that I was impressed with is that Obama's people actually put a lot of graphics that were describing what was going on while he was making the speech. One of the things that I saw over and over in the graphics is that this was a year of action, and it was going to take place in infrastructure. The other thing that that he did come out with some statistics, which were very, very strong statistics. However, you and I know that still the net job growth has not gotten to where it was pre-recession.
Correct.
And that's really not so terrific. I think one of the things that impressed a lot of people here tonight was that he's going to start this new sort of IRA thing. And I think that he wants to do that, and he wants to make sure that people have a way of putting in for their retirement. And he also talked about Guantanamo closing, which I thought was good. So
good.
I think all in all, he mentioned some things we never even thought were actually going to get mentioned.
Yeah, but here's the thing on the IRA front. You know, the reality is you've got to have wages that are sufficient to be able
in
to support
to
your family,
IRA,
to be
yeah.
able to put money aside. So, I mean, you know, it's all fine, well, and good that you're going to give me a mechanism to save. How about giving me the wages that I'll be able to save?
Right. Well, that's a very good question, and we didn't see it, obviously. And we're not seeing it right now, and unfortunately, we didn't see it on the statistics that the president was doing. But I have to tell you, you would have been proud, you would have been happy that many members of Congress would have taken exactly the position that you're taking.
And look, I think at a certain point, we've gotten to this level of inequality in this country that, you know, I've been talking about for 8 years on this program that, you know, and I think, you know, John Edwards hit it when he was running, you know, all of his problems aside, that there are really two very different Americas. They're the ones that, you know, the people who have a whole bunch, and then the folks who are on the treadmill, and they can't seem to take a look up from looking down to make sure they don't fall off.
Well, that is for sure, and I think that's exactly what I heard so many members of Congress talking about and saying, hey, listen, they want to pass a farm bill, they want to get minimum wage. What they said is they don't think the Republicans are going to go for it. And, I mean, in that way, we are such a divided country.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing that I did like that I've seen put out a couple of times is that he's going to finally use some executive orders and get things done that he can do, which I've been saying he should have been doing a couple of years ago. Once you finally wake up and realize that the person across the table from you is out for your demise, at some point you've got to stand up and defend yourself and maybe even swing back once or twice.
So, I'm sorry, somebody was just talking to me at the same time you were, so could you just repeat that?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, the idea
that
they're going
to
use...
you're standing out here in the middle of Century Hall, people just come up and talk to you.
I completely understand. You know, but the idea that he's going to use an executive order to raise the minimum wage, and he's saying that he's going to use the pen and the telephone and these options that have been an option for him in the past, something I've been saying he should have gained a backbone a couple of years ago, because when you finally wake up and realize, and maybe I'm hoping he's realized it, that the guy across the table wants to beat the tar out of him, that it's okay to stand up for yourself and maybe even swing back.
Well, right. And I think, you know, it'll be very interesting to see. I asked a member of Congress, I said, well, have you been advising the president? And the answer was just a firm no.
Right.
And this is a person in leadership, a Democrat. So I think they're happy with what he's done, but they don't feel, I think, that they have a lot of input into some of that process.
Any mention of, you know, because I've been seeing a lot of the fake news on Fox and a lot of the conservative pushback against, because, you know, all this income inequality has them very nervous. It has the very well-to-do very nervous that the, you know, the underclass is going to get upset. And I've been seeing all this pushback and kind of a rewriting of history. And I don't know if you've seen it too, but, you know, I saw on fake news on Fox that they didn't really believe that the economy was all that bad when Obama took over. And there's a pushback. And I wonder, did the president say anything about, hey, look, I inherited this economy. We're still digging out of it.
No, he really stayed away from that, honestly.
See, I think you got to keep hitting that.
Well, I'm not a speechwriter.
All right, well, there you go.
But there he was. So we are being shooed away from this place here, so I have
right.
to go. But I just wanted to give you the blow by blow here, as Statuary Hall is disintegrating right now.
I appreciate it, Alan. Great talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. No, I mean, you look. It's a move in the right direction, I guess. The idea that we're going to use some executive order to, you know, to at least help the people who benefit from federal contracts. The fact that our tax dollars are going to continue the low-wage workforce just is nuts to me. And, you know, someone sent me an email here during the interview that said, you know, today is also the day that President Bush gave his second State of the Union address, where he made the case for war in Iraq. That was 2003. So a very different world back then as of now. But, you know, I understand. And thanks, Bob, for the email. But understand, all of this stuff goes back to the policies of the Bush administration. And I think you've got to keep hitting on that. This whole economic collapse was all the Bush to do and the Clinton to do. You go back to Graham Leach Bliley, you go back to that, the economic, Modernization Act, of 1999, where they basically undid Glass-Steagall. I think at some point we've got to point that out and continue to hammer on it. I know the president's got rabbit ears, I know, but it is exactly what it is. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. More working people come to talk.
Thought-provoking, opinionated, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working-class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com. And search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The American Postal Workers Union is launching a national campaign protesting the outsourcing of mail services to Staples stores. Joined by community allies, the union is launching the protest campaign in San Francisco and San Jose, California. The union says USPS workers must staff the mail stores.